Hello, everyone. Welcome to our third annual New Formulas for Success Forum. I'm Sally Thornton, president and co-founder of Flexperience. Thank you. And I want Amy Karos to stand, our fabulous partner who helped us create the event. We're thrilled to see another huge crowd here and delighted to be joined by our panelists. You guys can come on up. And our keynote speaker, Lisa Belkin, who's got fire under her, man. This is obviously an amazing historic night for working mothers, and how fortunate we are that we were able to share some of it together. I think from now on, we should meet at bars and watch debates together. This was great. But this is a time, you know, most of you signed up before the VP debate, so we do want to honor the content of this program. And so we're going to change direction from political debates and global financial crisis to enjoy time together on something that more than 500 moms in this room have found common ground on, supporting each other on our individual journeys as mothers and professionals. And usually the person that has to thank the sponsors is the unlucky one who drew the short straw. But instead I get to feel like Oprah for a moment. Has everyone looked at their bags? I mean, Flexperience and MommyTract worked so hard to reach out to companies who would support this dialogue and would allow you to go home with amazing goodies. Because, you know, we're moms, we're givers, and it's our turn to give back to you. So please take a dig and round in there. It's a Bluetooth headset from Plantronics, which is like $60. An HP flash drive, Sephora lip gloss that I've already used. And if you think the paper in there is just marketing, there's like a Pete's coupon and Equinox for a month that's like $100. So like paper is not paper, kids. This is real stuff in your bag. So I want to do a heartfelt thanks because these companies are really out for working mothers to help them. It's Plantronics, HP, Kara Neuberger, and Chronicle Books. So why we're here, the success of these events just proves that this dialogue on how to blend professional aspiration with sometimes overwhelming personal responsibilities is really one of the most important topics of our time. And I want to stress that we believe in blending, not balance. To us, the word balance connotates perfection and equal symmetry, and blending is far more forgiving. It can be uniquely individual, artistic, and change over time. And so we prefer this sustainable and forgiving framework. And we believe that learning how to blend successfully is one of the most critical leadership competencies of today. It's what's going to keep fabulous leaders up here in the game as we're going through major life transitions. And it will allow us to deliver some of the most valuable results to our companies while still being a present mom, friend, and partner. And although everyone's blend is unique, there are some meta themes that we can learn from sharing these individual stories. There are specific skills around how to market ourselves in new ways, how to negotiate for what we want, how to create an infrastructure at home and at work to support our best work. And since these elements don't just happen, they take personal leadership, we're excited to hear about the courage of these panelists and how they've taken a stand for what they need and their ability to model it in a variety of ways. We always want to highlight that there's not one path. And while this sounds like a lot of hard work, all this leadership, we want you to know that there's so much momentum behind you. There's access to new technologies. There's CEOs saying their number one challenge is finding the right talent. And there's new changes in changing around looking at results and value for companies and not office time or FaceTime. And finally, we have Gen Y, who are fundamentally changing what it means to be a contributor at work because they demand flexibility over the fast track and new forms of blending, not the traditional career trajectory. So tonight, our panelists will explore these themes in more detail so you can walk away with three things: a greater awareness of how others have blended their own success, leaving you inspired about how you can architect yours, a commitment to try one new thing as a result of something you heard tonight, and the courage to ask for something you didn't think you could ask for. So with these three things, we want you to leave empowered and educated and energized because we are committed to this dialogue for you and for the greater public that we're hoping to change at flexperienceconsulting.com. Thank you. All right, where's Lisa? Okay. Oh, hello. Okay. So I can't think of a more perfect kickoff to this discussion than the woman who coined the phrase opt-out revolution 5 years ago. Prescient. She's the national voice in this topic, from her life's work column in the New York Times to her XM satellite radio show and her brand new blog, which I've already read, Motherload. We are so honored that she flew out to see us. Thank you, Lisa Belkin.
Hello again. Yeah, I'm a blogger. It started yesterday. I'm still not used to this. And I had to have my son teach me how to sort of access the site, actually. It was a mystery to me, and he did it in about a second and a half. My children are highly amused that I am now a parenting blogger. They think that the fact that their mother is somehow an expert on parenting is pulling the wool over the eyes of all the readers of the New York Times. I've always known that I'm not an expert on life-work blending either, and I've been doing that now for 9 years. And what always amazes me when I get up to talk about now both of these subjects is that they were things that at a point in my life that doesn't seem that long ago, but probably is, I didn't think about any of this. I mean, I was of the generation that in college was told we could do anything. And therefore, of course, that meant we could do everything and we could do it all at the same time. But I never remember a conversation in a dorm room ever of how we were going to combine all these things, how we were going to have children in these stellar jobs, how we were going to make it all work. We just were. We just assumed it would happen. I don't quite know how I would define my career goals back then. I don't think I had specified it, but I know that it was, you know, the highest point I could think of, and the line to it was linear and direct. And maybe it was editor-in-chief of the New York Times, or at least the head of the New York Times Magazine, but it was up there, and I was going. And I got a pretty good start out of the gate. I started out after graduation from college directly at the New York Times. It's a route that doesn't exist anymore, but my first job description was, well, my first job title was copy boy. And my job was to run copy, and in the days that I first got there, they literally were still pulling it out of a typewriter, and to get editors coffee and to answer phones and to do all the sort of infrastructure of the newsroom, and the deal was you got to write in your spare time. And it's the way an awful lot of people actually started at the Times. They don't do it anymore. It's a shame, because many of the names you know from the New York Times started out exactly like this, doing the job they had to do in order to do the job they wanted to do. And for the first 2 years that I worked for the New York Times, there was not a single day that I wasn't in that office. Not all day, every day, but part of some day. I would stop in, I would check messages, which at the time was an answering machine in the drawer, and you actually had to press the button in order to hear the messages. I didn't think of this as life interfering with work or work interfering with life. The two were seamless back then. The Times newsroom was where my friends were. It was where I wanted to be. It wasn't getting in the way of anything. It was everything. And I became a reporter and met Bruce Gelb on a street corner in New York at about the same time. And my now husband was then a medical resident in New York, and he was about to take a job about a year from then that he'd already committed to in Houston, Texas. And so we got engaged, and I informed the Times that I was now going to quit this dream job that I had elbowed my way toward as a copy boy, and marry a man that at the time I'd known less than a year, and move to Texas, a place I'd visited twice. And to me, this was, well, looking back, it made no sense. It certainly wasn't part of that linear and direct route. It was, in fact, my first detour. I just didn't know it at the time. So I moved to Texas. I quit the Times, which is a leitmotif throughout this story. I keep quitting the New York Times and never actually going anywhere. If you excuse me, I have my son's cold. And I didn't know anyone in Texas. All I knew about Texas was that it was hot and I hated the heat. I was married to a guy who worked all day and all night, so I did the only thing I knew how to do, which is report. Being a reporter is a great profession for someone who's a stranger, because you get to walk up to all sorts of strangers and ask them all sorts of nosy questions, and that's how I kind of found my way in Texas. I was supposed to write for the Times once in a while. But since I didn't have anything else to do, I ended up writing for them all the time. And Texas is just a spectacular place to be a reporter. It's the only state that used to be a country. Still thinks it is a country. There are people who think it should be its own country, but we won't go there. We're done with the debate. And so every story was just larger than life. It was professionally the best experience of my life. I would get up in the morning. I would get on Southwest Airlines. I used it as a bus service. I would pick a place I wanted to know something about. I went to No Trees, Texas to find out if there were trees. There aren't any. There aren't a lot of people there either. I jetted around. I spent time away from home. I did whatever I wanted. I loved it. I wrote my first book when I was in Texas about the medical center there. I wrote my first magazine pieces. I discovered that I had a love for a longer narrative style that I don't know that I ever would have found out if I stayed on that linear path. And at the end of our stay in Houston, I gave birth to Evan, who is now 17, and it was only after he was born, because some things dawned slowly to me, that I realized you can't use Southwest Airlines as a taxi service if you've got a newborn who's nursing at home. It was the beginning of the realization that everyone tells you about, but you never really understand until you've lived it, that everything had changed. We left Texas when Evan was 3 months old, so I never really had to deal with the details of being a national correspondent and having an infant. I did have to deal with being a metro reporter and having an infant, because we moved back to New York and moved to the suburbs, and I started what I think is the toughest of the life-work equation, which is I commuted every day for what could be anywhere from a half an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the traffic on the West Side Highway. And it was only then that I realized that the lessons that I learned in Texas were far more important once I came back home to New York. When I was a national reporter, they couldn't see me. All they saw was the work. The work was all that mattered. They didn't know how I did it. They didn't know where I did it. They couldn't see whether I was in the office or at home, whether I was calling in to answer questions from the desk from a movie theater, or when I was pregnant, I was often lying on the floor trying not to retch. They didn't know how I did it. The work was all that counted. Well, I came back to New York, and I asked for a cell phone. This was 1991, and back at the time, the way things worked were you would write your story at a computer at a desk, you would hit send, and then you would wait for an editor to call you over where you'd sit side by side and answer questions, and then you got what's called the good night from the desk, and you were free to leave. Well, the difference between answering the questions there or answering the questions by phone on the way home on that cell phone was the difference between being home for bedtime and bath time and not being home for bedtime and bath time. So I got this cell phone, which, you know, remember Radar O'Reilly and MASH? And I became one of the first really annoying people to either talk and drive, because there were no headsets, or talk all the way home on Metro North. But I did it. I got home. I bought back an hour of my life. I did this for about 3 years, and then I moved the equation further and brought everything back home. I was pregnant at that time with Alex, who is now 14. Those numbers sound so big to me. And I wanted to work part-time. I wanted to work, I'm sorry, part-time in the office and part-time from home. This was unheard of in 1994. They let me do it a little, and they told me I shouldn't tell anyone. And then I said, but I want this official. And they said, well, sorry, no, we don't do that. And I said, okay, then I'm going to go write a book, and I'll write for the magazine. And I ended up, like I told you, quitting the Times again and working from home. I was really proud of myself then. I was absolutely positive that I had solved the entire problem. I was going to be super mommy. I think I had some vision of, you know, nursing the baby with one hand and typing with the other. And there was probably some organic dinner simmering out there somewhere on the stove. And everything was going to be seamless and zen. And I was just going to be the perfect worker and the perfect mom. And I didn't really understand what everyone was complaining about. I had my fax machine. I had my modem, which you took the phone and put it in to send my stories. I had this, you know, all this new technology in this office that I created above the garage, and I was going to do it all. My first day as a work-from-home mom went something like this. I got up in the morning. I put on my Gap sweats, because what is the point of working from home if you can't do it in your sweats? I went downstairs. I had breakfast with Evan, who was about 3 years old. And then my babysitter came. Nobody should ever try to work from home without a full-time babysitter. It is work. My babysitter came. I kissed Evan sweetly on the top of his head and, you know, said, bye-bye, honey. Mommy's going to work now. And I went up into this fancy, equipped technological office that was going to change my life. And I closed the door. And my three-year-old proceeded to have a nervous breakdown on the other side. I mean, he was shrieking his bloody little head off. And I figured out after several days of this that he had a far better sartorial sense than I had given him credit for. He knew that when mommy was in heels and hose and a suit, then mommy belonged to work. And when mommy was in her Gap sweats, mommy belonged to him. And he did not understand why mommy was home, but mommy wasn't his. And he was furious with me. So after a few days, again, I told you things dawn on me slowly, I got up. I put on heels and hose and a suit. I left the house after kissing my dear son goodbye and saying, mommy's going to work now. I went to the local diner where I had a cup of coffee very slowly. And then I proceeded with the knowledge of ahead of time of the babysitter to sneak back into my own house. And then I finally got some work done. So fast forward a few years of kind of making this work to what I call either my epiphany or my nervous breakdown, depending on how you look at it. Alex by now is about 4 or 5. He has a checkup one day that includes shots. I have promised him I will take him to this checkup. I have a deadline, a magazine piece, a cover story. It happened to be on Christine Todd Whitman, and there's a very cute story about Alex picking up the phone when I didn't know it and talking to Christine Todd Whitman, which is another one of the complications of working at home, but that's for another time. So I had a cover story on Christine Todd Whitman that was closing at pretty much the same moment that Alex had his appointment that included shots. I was going to be super mommy. You would have thought I'd learned. I was going to be super mommy and basically be in two places at once. So I had Alex in his car. People ask me sometimes if I tell this story, so why didn't you just reschedule the doctor's appointment? Have you ever tried to get a pediatrician's checkup appointment in Westchester? I was going to be there. I put Alex in his car seat. I stood by the fax machine and waited for the galleys. And you know how you pull and it doesn't come any faster, but you pull anyway? I get the galleys in my hand. I jump in the car. I drive to the pediatrician's office. I'm making the changes because this thing closes in a half an hour and has to be finished. Alex has his head on my lap. I have the galleys over his head. And I'm calling in the changes to my editor on a cell phone, which has gotten smaller, but even so. And there's a woman sitting across from me just glaring at me. And I realized I must have looked like something out of Mommy Dearest. I mean, I was failing my son. I wasn't doing a great job editing this piece. And here I was doing the best I could. And it really wasn't enough. I remember it as I came home that same day and the phone was ringing. And my husband says that I'm confabulating events and that it really wasn't as poetic or dramatic as that. But I can tell you that shortly after this, I got a call from the New York Times business section, and they said they wanted to do a column about life and work. And since I was such a good example of balance, they wanted me to write it. I took the column for two reasons. The first is the reporter in me wanted in on this story. I truly think that this pull between home and work is the story of our generation. It's not that parents have not been torn before, but demographically, both parents have not been so torn, and we have not had the technology that means that work is always there, and at the same time that work is pulling harder, that every statistic shows that we are working longer and harder hours, that there are more demands from the workplace, you've got the other side where I don't know if Johnny can't come home from school and just ride his bike around the neighborhood, or we think Johnny can't come home from school and ride his bike around the neighborhood, but the result is the same. We feel needed at home more at the same time we are demanded more at work. And I wanted to cover that. The second reason that I took on the column was because I wanted answers. I figured that this column was going to be, you know, a Martha Stewart or Dear Abby of life-work balance, and that I was going to reach out to all sorts of experts and ask them questions, and then I was going to write about it and be a hero because I was going to tell everyone how to handle their life. It took about two columns before I realized that there weren't going to be a lot of answers. What the column became, and this was in the evolving days of the internet, was this remarkable online electronic conversation. I would write a column, and women, and yes, they were mostly women, would write to me about their lives and what they were trying to handle and what they couldn't do and what their doubts were and what their fears were. And I would then turn around and make that into another column. And eventually it became a conversation that everyone could see and participate in because it's now, you know, online and in forums and we have comment sections. In its early days, it was just me. And what I was struck by in all the emails that I got, and in the first year there were about 10,000, which back then was pretty remarkable. And in those 10,000, before I stopped counting, there wasn't one, not a single note from a single woman who was out there reading this stuff that said, "What is all the fuss about? I can do that. I'm not having a hard time with anything. Why is everyone complaining?" There is nobody who said, "Here's how I'm doing it, and it works." Everyone thought that someone else was doing this. Okay, everyone was sure that someone else had an answer. You know, your sister-in-law with the perfect nails, or your college roommate who really wasn't as smart as you were, but she's making more money, or the neighbor, and actually my neighbor does this, who color codes and alphabetizes her detergents underneath the sink. I mean, we all know someone who seems to be doing this effortlessly and better than we were. I heard from people with children who said that their colleagues and their friends without children just didn't get it. Absolutely could positively not understand what having kids does to a working life. I heard from so many people without children who said that this work-life family balance revolution was leaving them behind that I wrote a whole article about that, a whole magazine piece. I heard from people who were on their own, without partners, single parents, raising kids, saying, "If only I had someone to share this with, then maybe I could handle it." I heard from an awful lot of people who said, "If their partner would just go away, then perhaps their life might be a little simpler." But the fact is, no matter who I was hearing from, nobody thought that they could do this right, and the only conclusion I came to, the only answer I have for you, is that nobody can do it because it can't be done. At least not in the perfectly balanced Zen way of we are in control of everything all the time without ever dropping a ball and always feeling completely sane and pleased with ourselves. It can't be done. And so I've started to replace the word blended is good, mine is sanity. On a good day, I've got sanity. On a good day, I don't feel like I'm completely losing it all the time. You know the voice in your head, the one that says, I ate that extra cookie and I didn't finish that report and here's everything I did wrong today and here's where I yelled too loud and here's where I sent them to school, you know, in their dirty t-shirt on picture day. And here's all the things I have screwed up today. My only piece of advice from 10 years of writing about life and work is try and replace that voice in your head with the one that says, look what I did today. Because what I accomplished, what I got through, what I provided is damn amazing. Thank you.
Let's give one more round for Lisa for doing it. Those were great anecdotes, great stories, and great advice for the rest of us as well along the way. Welcome. My name is Diane Dwyer, and I work over at NBC News, NBC Bay Area News, we call ourselves today. And I'm going to get to be the moderator of this fabulous panel of ladies. But first, I want to just a little programming note. There are some bags, unattached, uncalled for bags in the middle there. If you have a bag next to you that doesn't belong to somebody, we're asking if you can move it out to the aisles because there's some folks in the back who didn't get bags. And we have enough bags for everybody. We don't have to have a bag attack. But we have enough, but we want to move those out so we can move them to the back and get everybody their bags. So thank you for doing that. And just so you know a little about me, I anchor the weekend news and I report during the week, and I'm trying to find the blending balance thing as well. In fact, tonight I'm playing a couple different roles. I was mommy during the day, and now I'm moderator, and then in about a couple hours at 11 o'clock, I'll be reporter and be on the air with some kind of story from this that I can gather together quickly after I'm done here. We'll see how that goes. So there you go. And I have two children, an 8-year-old and a 9-year-old in elementary school and sort of trying to figure all that out. Although I will say for the folks who have the little ones, it gets more manageable once they're in school. At least you have some kind of schedule to work on, at least during the school year. So on that note, let me introduce my esteemed panel of guests for you. We have Tina Sharkey, who is the CEO at Baby Center. Tina, thanks for joining us today. Julie Borenstein, who's the SVP at Sephora. Thanks. And thanks for all the goodies. Some good goodies in the bag from there. Gretchen Libby, who is the executive producer at Lucasfilms. Valerie Taglio, VP at Hewlett-Packard. Thank you, Valerie. And Wilma Wallace, VP and Deputy General Counsel at Gap. Do you wear your sweater?
No, but I do appreciate the plug.
Yeah. She got the plug for Gap there. We appreciate that very much. All right, so we're going to start with talking to everybody about why we're here, essentially trying to find the balance, the blending, the trade-offs, and the roadblocks to being a mom and being a working person and being able to enjoy both of them at least some of the time, if that works. And earlier this month, Tina shared with us an idea. She said, and I quote, I think, balance is bunk. Baloney, not going to happen. Since tonight is the third sellout series on this topic of blending, let's start with getting to know each one of you and this new formula for blending. Any insights on how your formula perhaps changes over time out of learning or out of the age of your child? I suppose both of those have changed for me personally. All right, so let's start with you, Tina.
I would say, firstly, thank you. And yes, I did say balance is bunk because I feel like, to quote Lisa, you know, we're all doing fantastically well. And we should just stop and appreciate the incredible gifts we have to have the opportunities. And the idea that you're going to try and achieve something that's out there as opposed to acknowledging what you've already achieved is just not fair. And so I don't ever believe in putting something out there that you should try and achieve that you can't achieve, because we all have such tremendous strengths, and I think we should celebrate them. So having said that, I really try in my life not to sweat the details and the small stuff and let that stuff get me crazy, and really try and appreciate what I like to call work-life integration. And, you know, I'm a working mom. I'm a mom of Jacob and Charlie. Jacob is 9. Charlie is 6. I'm married to a venture-backed technology entrepreneur. We live very busy lives. We just relocated to San Francisco to come and have the opportunity to run Baby Center. And it's hard, and it's a lot of juggling, but it's okay. And sometimes an egg falls, and it's okay. Leave the egg on the floor and keep moving. Someone's going to clean it up, or you're going to clean it up later, but it's okay. And from my perspective, I really feel like we have to celebrate the incredible opportunity that we have. We have to learn to integrate and find times to compartmentalize our experience. So for me, you know, I really try and sit down with my kids at least 4 nights a week during the week. And so from 6:30 to 9, that's what I am doing. From 9 to 11, I'm doing email. From 11 to 1, I'm doing house stuff, like, or I'm sleeping, or I get up at 5 in the morning. Like, I find other ways to do it, but you have to make the important things a priority for you, and you have to create environments where you can be successful in that way.
Thank you very much. And not prioritizing having to hand make the cookies for the class field trip every time. You can buy them at Safeway, really. It's okay. Kids don't know the difference. All right, Julie, how about you?
I have a 2.5-year-old, actually he's 3 tomorrow, and a 5-year-old. And I would say that I've only been in the workforce with children for 5 years, but each year sort of, and each month and each day sort of knew, just like I think with the phase of your baby life and there's good things and bad things, I think new sort of challenges come up every day and you sort of figure out how to solve for one and then you have another one. And so I definitely think there's a lot of sort of constantly trying to problem solve. And I think that's okay. I think that as you go along in the process, you learn. And I think that one thing that really helped me sort of very early on was I read a great book, and it had a lot of statistics about the European countries and how they handle working motherhood and the U.S. And it kind of made me mad. And I think a little anger isn't a bad thing, because it made me feel a little more indignant in the workplace and a little more proud of the fact that I was able to be such a good employee and contributor, and also such a good sort of contributor to society by raising great kids. And so I think that has sort of helped me maintain balance. And I think keeping your priorities really clear in your head is something that, you know, and reminding yourself of them all the time is also really required, because I think the discipline, as everyone in this room knows, of trying to get it all done, being a great, great at your job, being great at motherhood, and then trying to be a wife and a friend and all those other things, and trying to keep your family's life organized and all of those things, it's just absurd the amount required. And so, you know, I think we'll get into some tips and things like that, but I think one of the things that has helped me is to sort of simplify and say no to everything that's not essential, and really keep clear on what matters so that my time can be spent on those things. So,
thank you. And I found that as well. It is a really good excuse when the PTA is coming around for stuff. I would love to, but I work. And you kind of sometimes get a free pass that way. You still have to do other stuff, but you can get a free pass sometimes doing that, which has helped me. All right, Gretchen.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Mommy Tract and Flexperience for a great event tonight.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Awesome. And I have a 10-year-old son, and I'm a single mom. I'm divorced, but with a great ex-husband. We're great friends. But I think my story is mostly about community, because I feel like the company that I work at has a real strong family sense. And when my son was 5 years old, he came down with leukemia, which was a big surprise to everyone. Oh. But he's fine. He's fine. He's done. But the story that I learned, and up to that point, I was, you know, headstrong producer, working really hard, you know, with a small child at the same time. And, you know, we used to fight, my ex and I used to fight about, you know, when the kid was sick with a cold or something, who had a better job and needed to go to work while the other one stayed home, you know. And that's not what caused us to get divorced, but maybe. But and unfortunately, we did split the year before my son got sick, so it wasn't like I could all of a sudden stop working and, you know, just stay home and the other one would continue to work. So our company was amazing. Our community was amazing. People came out of the woodwork that we never knew. And, you know, today, our strong friends, dear friends, sorry, I'm so choked up. But I think that would taught me how to be humble and just say, you know what, you need help. And even if you don't have a sick child, you need help. You know, I think you look around and you ask your neighbor, you ask your friends who work or don't work to take care of your child. You ask your coworkers to watch your child while they're under your desk while you run to a meeting. There's so many ways that you need to just open yourself up to help as well, so that you can do that big, powerful job that many of us have. And I think that you can't pretend that you need help to do that big, powerful job, that you don't need help. And I think that's kind of been my mantra and what I've been thankful for, because in the midst of my child's illness, and he kind of finished chemo, I think, last year, I got promoted to an executive producer. So I was able to do my job and at the same time build my career, which I'm still bewildered by. But so
congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Valerie?
That's great. I want to thank Lisa, a very inspirational, and it allowed me to, in a very brief moment, sort of celebrate what I'd accomplished today rather than feeling I hadn't done enough. So thank you very much for that. I have an 8-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old son. And I think, you know, for me, I had a couple of turning points in my motherhood experience. So, you know, I think one, when my daughter was born, my second child, I had my first child at 38 and my second at 42. And I found myself in the sandwich generation. I had two elderly parents, and I would tell people that I had, I think at one point I had a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, and two 80-year-olds. And so I had 4 children, and I found myself in a very sort of challenging situation of, you know, feeling that I'd waited to have my children and feeling very jealous about my time with them, but also feeling responsibility and, of course, desire to be with my parents and help them. And so I, at the time, I made the decision to go part-time, and I was very fortunate to find a job share situation at HP, which was very accommodating, and it gave me that extra time not only to be with my children, but also to be with my parents and care for my parents. And the other thing that I found was I found, you know, very much that kids live in the moment, and that in being a mother, you know, every day there are a series of moments. And that, you know, for me, I wanted to be there for more of those moments. I knew I couldn't be there for all of them, but I wanted to be there for more than I was experiencing, because I knew when I came home at the end of the day and I said, "What did you do at school today?" And I'm sure many of you have heard this answer, "Nothing." And it wasn't enough, and I wanted to be there. And so having the job share situation allowed me to do that. And then the other sort of epiphany for me, I was very fortunate, and I've had the same nanny for 12 years, which has been incredible, and it's been a huge support. But I remember my nanny calling me at work and saying, "Well, your mother is coming to tea this afternoon." And I realized, wow, you know, she's living the life that I want to live. It's like, I want to have tea with my mom. I want to be with my kids. And so, you know, again, it led me to the decision to pursue a job share and to have that greater flexibility. Now, at the same time, I've had friends that have said, you know, "Wow, you have the perfect life because you've got this great, you know, balance." And that's definitely not the case, because it's still a challenge and it's still a juggling act, but it's certainly given me more flexibility, I think is the way I would describe it. So,
all right, thanks a lot, Valerie and Wilma.
Okay, so I'm not sure that there's that much. Can people hear me?
Yeah,
I'm not sure there's that much more to add, but I think my mantra is enough is enough. And when I reflect back on some of the transitions that I've made and my family have made, I think it's having the courage to realize when enough is enough. And I have a loving husband who's one of the major ingredients, really, to the success that I've had. And you'll hear more about him. But it is that partnership. And then I have 3 boys. One is 11-year-old, one's 9, and one's 6.5. So it's a little chaotic at my house occasionally, and I'm wondering what I'm going to walk back into tonight. I'll let it go, and I'll fight the battles that need to be fought. So I think, you know, one of the major transitions for me, which I didn't even think about as a transition or a juncture, was leaving a law firm and choosing to go in-house, and in particular to a company, The Gap, a company that's as supportive as it is. And I do think that that's a key ingredient to many of us having the success that we have, many of my role models in the business world having the success that they've had, is being in or with an organization or a community that can support that success. And role models, honestly, who've paved the way, and hopefully I continue to pave the way for them. So I think a part of it was me sitting back, even before I had kids, but as I was engaged and thinking about a marriage and a life, hopefully with children, and thinking, enough is enough. I see what's happening in law firms, I see partners, and I don't want your life. So I think that was a real thoughtful moment that really set a course for me. And then the second was after our second child. And I think, you know, at the risk of offending people who only have one child, and one child will fill up 100% of your time, just as three or five will. But I think for us, with one child, you feel like, okay, you can manage. And, you know, occasionally you go into survival mode when he's sick, and then you get sick, and then your husband gets sick, and then you get sick again. But you figure a week or two, and we'll just keep our heads low, and we'll get through this. But two children kind of changed the equation for us. And as I was coming back from my maternity leave and my husband was going on his paternity leave, it just was very clear to me that this something's got to give. I'm not going to have the quality of life that I want our family to have if both of us are working full-time jobs. And my husband's a teacher, so the economic equation was pretty clear that it probably made sense for me to continue on with my position at The Gap and for him to go to a part-time position. And he actually did end up going to a 60% time position and consequently can deal with the drop-off and the pickup, and he's there for the piano lessons, and you just kind of figure it out. And people would, over time, as my kids have been growing, say, what's your schedule? You know, when do you go into work? It's like, what month are you talking about? You know, if you're not breastfeeding and trying to make sure you get home before they go to bed, but, you know, in time so you don't have to pump. And then, you know, when there's two or three people that you need to drop off at different places, I mean, you really do find that your life has like 6 month, maybe, increments. And you find that you have to adjust and plan and do some trading off at each one of those junctures. And just now, I think I'm getting to the point where I feel like we're on a little bit more of a stable path. So my, I guess, mantra has been just figure out when enough is enough. And harmony, even more so, I think, than blend or what are some of the other terms that we've thrown out. But I've tried to find harmony in my life. So those are my thoughts.
All right.
The concept I'm getting from all of you guys and from my life as well is that, and it's an adjustment, you're always adjusting, and that 6 month windows concept is because your demands and needs with your children are different when they're little than when they're in elementary school and middle school and high school. And so I think you have to be flexible. And the flexperience concept sort of all the time, because you got to be flexible in different ways as your children change and as you change there. Okay, and so one of the other parts about being flexible is this concept of, you know, the 9 to 5 or 8 to 8, depending on job, and it being all about hours and showing up and being there. Lisa, you were talking about that. Suddenly they could see you and they knew when you were there and when you were not there in your pajamas or whatever. And so having to be at the workplace for a certain set number of hours versus what women tend to be pretty good at, which is getting the project done and perhaps not having to take 12 hours a day to get that project done and being able to do it more efficiently. And perhaps addressing one of the questions we have is how you've addressed that with your company, if you've gone that route at all, and how to get, it's gutsy to walk up to your boss and say, look, I can get my job done in a short amount of time, or however you say it, for probably not quite like that. And so how you get there and how you talk the boss into that,
and still maintain your level of professionalism at work and the respect of the folks who are working for you as well. And on that concept, let's start with you, Gretchen.
Well, I think, certainly I think all of us are in positions of senior management to some degree, and we all revolve around a lot of meetings at work and a lot of time spent face-to-face with other people in, you know, senior staff. And so it is difficult, and I don't think that I've done anything revolutionary in being away from the office for large periods of time. I do travel a lot, but again, I think the one key that I've discovered is delegation is a good method in any kind of job, regardless of whether you're a mother or not. I mean, if you delegate, you can relieve yourselves of duties and look for bigger things. But to have a backfill for yourself and to have someone who understands what you're doing day to day, and they can't maybe make all the decisions or participate in everything that you're doing, but to understand where you are and just to give some of that responsibility, which I don't think is pushing it off somewhere else, but empowering other people, sharing your knowledge, and in the process, you know, covering yourself and pulling yourself up at the same time.
Okay, fair enough. And how about you, Valerie?
Well, I have to say at HP, probably virtual working is more the norm now than the exception. I mean, particularly in the business that Eileen and I are in, which is the PC business after the Compaq merger. I mean, more than half our team is in Houston. And so I had a boss very early on in my career that said, don't confuse activity with results. And I've always felt you know, that very much, that, you know,
that is great.
I don't, you know, it's all about what you deliver, and I think Eileen, my job share partner, and I, you know, feel that very strongly that, you know, if somebody's delivering results, you know, if they want to work at home, if they're remote, if they need to leave work early because of a child situation, you know, we respect that people are committed and responsible and they do the right thing, you know, for the most part that is true. And so, you know, I know Eileen had experience the other day. I mean, she and I typically we make sure we get home at night for dinner and get the kids to bed, and then we're typically online, I mean, till quite late at night. And I think, you know, the other day she said I was coming in at 9:30 and I was going past somebody's window and I just felt that, you know, that glare of, you know, you know, it's 9:30 and you feel like holding a sign saying, yeah, I was up till 1 a.m., you know, on email. And, you know, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I don't feel we need to explain ourselves to anybody. Again, you know, as long as we're delivering and delivering the results, then we feel that very much for, you know, for the people that we manage as well.
Okay, thank you. And how about, Tina, what kind of leadership skills did you use to get there? I mean, what did you do perhaps differently from the folks before you, given the new challenges of being a mom at the same time, to get into that position?
I think the first thing that I did is I don't believe in trying to be anything more than I am. So I don't pretend I'm not a working mom. I don't pretend that, like, my kids are off in a closet somewhere and, like, they're being managed by some, you know, stay-at-home troll that's dealing with them. I put it right out there. Like, you know, I am very, very transparent and very honest about my life and what I'm going through, because I think that, you know, I'm a person just like my team are people, and we all have real lives. And I think the most important thing you can do in leadership is to have great people around you, have fantastic people who understand what their work is and what you expect from them, and have them understand what they can expect from you. So I always believe in having a very open and transparent dialogue, and I always have. And I work with a lot of women in my years who, you know, pardon the expression, would feel like they were strapping it on. And I would say, like, it's just not what I'm about. I am who I am, you know. I am juggling, and it's okay. And, yes, I am, you know. No, I'm, you know, I come from New York, so maybe there's more of that there. Or maybe actually more here. I don't know. But it just was a very, you know, people pretending as if, you know, they didn't have the kids and everything was neat and perfect behind you, or it was all in the shower behind a curtain. And that's just not what my life looks like, and that's okay. And so I've always led with honesty, and I've always led with what I believe is an authentic presence in what I'm trying to achieve for my company, for my family, and for my community. And I do the same with my children. I really try and bring my children into my world, not into my office, because when I'm working, I'm working. But, you know, this happens to be a Mommy Tract event, but I give lectures at schools and I do lots of talks. And, you know, I invite my kids to come if they can sit quietly in the back and read a book. Like, I want them to know who I am. And I also want them to understand how I believe in giving back to the community. And that it's not just about them and it's not just about work. And actually, it's more than both of those things, that we have a commitment to our community as well. And I believe that creating that transparency, both for my team at the office, for my family at home, and for the community that I try and engage in, is the only authentic way I can be, because the truth is always so much stronger than fiction.
So I think everyone wants to work for you now, Jessica. You're going to be getting a lot of emails.
Yay, Baby Center.
All right. So, quick story about bringing your kids to work. I work the weekends, and it's more casual on the weekends, so I can bring them in occasionally. And they've always been low-key. You know, they get on the computer and do stuff, and they're totally fine. And a couple of weeks ago, I had my son with me, and they had changed the background of our set, and they had a screen up, and normally there was no screen, and the rule was you weren't ever allowed to walk behind the set while I'm on television, because that's a bad thing.
Good rule.
And so the screen came up, and my son thought that that might have meant that you couldn't see or something, not sure exactly. But while I'm reading a story about President Bush, you see in the background...
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. And thank God I didn't know while I was reading, because I couldn't see. And as soon as I got to the reporter, I get in my ear, your
great.
Son is in the background. And I turn around. And he's like, goes crawling off. So we banned him from the newsroom for a while. So just when you think you got it set on that, you know, and you know how they're going to behave, man, they throw you every once in a while. All right. Julie, how about you? How have you sort of led in the way? What have you done to get where you are and sort of leading for other moms too and setting a stage, I guess?
I think that I agree with the authenticity. I think that you don't want to feel like you're taking something on that you can't actually manage. So I do think that you really want to be honest about what you're able to do and where you are in your life and what you want to be doing. I would say that working very efficiently, writing everything down the second it comes into my head, because if I don't write it down, I will completely forget it. Just why I have notes. And hiring really good people. I spend a lot of time finding the right people to hire, because I feel like if you have a strong team, stronger than you, you look great, they enjoy their job, you give them the ability to do their thing, and everyone does well. I think being sort of professional first and foremost, but also being very clear about what your limits are when you're discussing it with your boss or with your colleagues. I think one thing that I do is I leave at 5 every single day, no matter what. No one's allowed to schedule meetings after that. And I'm home with my kids in the evening, and then I get back online, as sounds like everyone does, and does more work. And the reality is, you know, you're more efficient. Yes, you don't get as much done as you might have before you had kids, but you have to still believe in yourself and believe that the company's lucky to have you and, you know, you're doing a good job. I think that outsourcing what you're comfortable outsourcing and what you're financially able to outsource as much as possible, the things that don't matter, has sort of freed me up from feeling like I need to be perfect at home and taking care of everything. I think also one thing that's been sort of very helpful for me is sort of engaging my family in my sort of struggles. So just one example is, my daughter just started kindergarten, and so for the first time she sort of has this concept of someone goes to the board and they write down ideas and the class discusses it. And so I thought, all right, she's sort of been in kindergarten a few weeks and we're having trouble in the morning. It's just totally chaotic. Anyone who's on the Burlingame Mothers list, which I know there are a lot of people here, I think when I first moved here, I was like, anyone have any good suggestions for morning time routines? And I got like 50 responses, but none of them quite applied to me. So I kept thinking about it and trying to solve it. And finally, I decided I was going to engage my family in helping me solve it. So I said we were having a family meeting. It was our first. And on Saturday morning, I got a big piece of paper and a big marker. And I said, all right, what are the things we have to get done this morning? You know, and every morning. And so sort of we wrote our list of things we had to get done and things they were looking forward to doing. I had to give my son, who's younger, a puzzle so he wouldn't disrupt, but he could sort of hear, and so he was busy doing something. And so we sort of walked through the mornings together, and they, by owning it to some degree, you know, they sort of felt a little more empowered to make sure the mornings actually work the right way. And I mean, that's obviously a principle in the workplace too, get everyone a part of the solution. But I think, you know, doing the best to manage the sort of your personal life so you can focus in the hours that you're at work, and then being sort of laser focused while you're at work and delivering results and having people acknowledge you, and also making sure people are acknowledging you. I guess what something else I would say is, when you've accomplished something, make sure that it's recognized so that, you know, you can succeed and you can get credit for the work that you do.
Well, and that's good advice too, because some of what you're telling us is higher level executive stuff of sort of you're setting the stage, you guys, rather than if you're more middle management where you're still sort of working your way up where you can't set that platform as much, but you can certainly ask, you can certainly remind them when you've accomplished something and succeeded in something so that you can work your way up there so you can set some of those deals. And Wilma, how about for you? And can you fill us in a little bit too? When did you, were you already at the Gap when you had kids?
Yes.
You had already switched?
Yes.
So you were fairly well into your career at that point as well?
I don't feel like I'm well into my career now.
As a very young person, you were very well into your career.
No. I know I'm celebrating in my accomplishments, but also, you know, humbled by the future. But I was already at Gap, I had been there probably 2 or 3 years before I started having children. And I will say that I think pregnant individuals are probably the most productive people ever. And then when you come back from maternity leave, except for the fog you have, I think you're equally as productive. And I think you just continue kind of on that trajectory, given particularly the lack of sleep you have, you know, for the first 5 or 6 years that you have young children. So I do think that we're particularly productive. And I also have this thesis, I suppose, that a lot of accomplishment and acknowledgement around accomplishment and some of my more significant promotions happened when I thought I was perhaps the least engaged at work, when I had 2 young kids at home and things were going crazy and I really didn't feel like I was at the top of my game, was ironically when a lot of my significant achievements and accomplishments were recognized, which I don't know if other people have that shared experience, but that's certainly my observation. And I think my observation of a lot of other people, at least at Gap. But the two things I think that haven't been talked about here is listening. And that's something that as a senior leader, you try to learn to do very well. And I try to listen to my family, and I try to listen to my children in particular, to figure out, is there a time when I need to engage more than I naturally would? Is there a time when I think they really need me to show up at school, when I otherwise might not? So I try to listen for cues for them. Is there a time when I just have to say no to any optional events at night? So I try to listen to them. And then the other is planning. And I'm not a planner by nature. I'm one of those people who thinks it's kind of all up here and it'll all work out. But I've learned to become more of a planner as I've become more of a leader. And then I try to plan more at home. And I get the school schedule at the beginning of the year, and I plot out the year on our personal calendar. I call my assistant if you have them. If you don't, you can do it yourself. And just plot out field trips, which I try to go on because it's predictable, and a lot of the working mothers are the ones that end up going on the field trips because you know when they're happening and you can plot it out and you just take the day off. And if you have to, you can sneak away, you know, in the bowels of the exploratorium and try to take a telephone call. But that's the way I found I can engage. So I try to plan and I try to show up when it's important. Again, the field trips are important to me. Sometimes making the cookies and the brownies is important to me. And I think that's how I kind of balance it all and feel like I'm still in touch. Leadership, I think the leadership qualities I would throw out there again is planning and just listening to your family.
Planning especially. I'm not a planner either, but you just have to or stuff starts falling apart. You know, you've got to start making lists. It just doesn't work otherwise. Mm-hmm. Let's move on from there to, we have a number of new moms in the audience. So for them, is there any advice you wish you had received that perhaps you didn't, that you could share with the new moms on how to how to get there, how to achieve in business and achieve, I suppose, at home at the same time. And let's start with Valerie.
So, well, looking back many, many years, it's harder to remember now, but I think, I'll start with the best advice, which I think I shared with Sally, that I got when I was returning to work, and I think I read it in Working Mothers magazine, and it was just one of those one-liners that really stuck with me, and it was, go to the bathroom before you leave work. And it was such a simple thing. It was so easy to remember. And 12 years later, as I'm rushing out the door thinking, I got to get to the car, I go, no, I got to stop and go. Because that way when you walk in the door, you can give your kids your immediate attention instead of just a minute, you know. And so that has served me. That has served me very well over the years. And beyond that, I mean, it was certainly the concept of, you know, childcare, which is just fundamental, I think, to, you know, a working mom, right? I mean, it's childcare because if it's working, it's great. If it's not, then it's hugely stressful. And so for me, you know, I think it was the advice of, you know, start early, start before you have your child. I remember getting very emotional because I hired a nanny before my son was even born. And I remember saying to my husband, like, he's not even born yet, you know, and I've already outsourced him and so forth. But, you know, it was that peace of mind of having somebody that I trusted and, again, is still with us 12 years later, you know, that I feel hugely grateful for. And, you know, besides my husband has been the most influential support in enabling me to work. And then, you know, I think the other is, you know, don't underestimate the equity that you have with your, you know, wherever you work, your company or your business, because, you know, I think that's something I didn't really think about actually until my second child was born. I thought, you know what, you know, I've been with this company for a while, I'm highly regarded, you know, I can really, you know, go back and ask for what I need in terms of transition. So, you know, I feel looking back on it with my son, you know, I raced back to work because I felt the pressure to do so. Mm-hmm. And I've looked back since then and thought, you know, what was the big rush? Like, did it really matter that I came back a couple of months earlier, you know, than I would have liked? So looking back, I, you know, with my daughter, I did. I waited till I was ready and I felt ready to go back and I had things in place. You know, with my son, I wasn't. So I think that, you know, I don't know how I would have heeded that advice, you know, but now looking back on it, I wish I had done that. And then also, as I say, just, you know, think about the equity that you have and what that enables you to ask for, because, you know, I'm sure that, you know, for all of you in this audience, you have great value in whatever you're doing from a work perspective, and that you can ask for what you need in terms of transition back and in terms of different working arrangements.
Good advice, really good advice. How about you, Julie? Any other ideas, too?
I would say two things pop to mind that haven't already been said. One of them is just a little more of the same, which is just feel comfortable saying no. And really put a limit on sort of external demands on you. And I would say the second is, especially with young kids, give up on the notion of the family dinner. So the reality is what I realized, and I was sort of always like feeling pressure to come home and make dinner right away after work, and then the kids were always too hungry at that point, so they weren't well behaved and they didn't want to sit at the dinner table. And the reality is that little kids don't really sit around the table and discuss the day and have a nice day. And so I sort of made this realization and started having my nanny feed my kids before I get home. So now I come home, they're well fed, they're happy. I usually do run to the bathroom and hug them while I'm peeing, but only because the thought of like being 3 minutes later to home, you know, I don't want to do it, but I get to spend my evening playing with them and giving them dessert, but, you know, I don't know, that sort of helped free me up a little bit, is this sort of giving up on that notion that doesn't even really exist with little kids. Maybe it'll change when I get older, but...
That is a great idea. Yeah. That is a very good idea, because it's stressful getting dinner ready.
Yeah. Oh.
And if you can get there afterwards and enjoy them rather than having that stress... That's a great idea. Yeah. One of the other things we've talked about before was the whole BlackBerry notion and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing that we have instant, constant contact with work. And we've talked about that, whether sometimes it's a good thing and sometimes it's not, and it's managing that BlackBerry and your laptop and everything. And Tina, can you fill us in a little bit on how you've managed to do that?
Yeah, I find that the BlackBerry and the Google Calendar and all these tools are incredible liberators for me. So I don't use it as CrackBerry. I'm very, no, seriously, because my husband definitely has that issue, whereas he can't put it down. And I'm very deliberate with it, and I believe in practicing active listening. So, for example, if I'm waiting for something, and I'm at home with my kids, I put my BlackBerry down when I'm with them. But if I'm waiting for something or I feel the need to interact with it for something I need to write down, I'll actually say to Jacob or Charlie, I'm just going to do this email right now, and I'm going to be, you know, I'm just going to, and then when I'm done, I'm going to put it down. But I don't have it with me, and I tell them and sort of ask for their active permission so they acknowledge that I am present and I am with you. You are my priority. You are what I am focused on right now. And I actually ask the same of my team, which is I say, look, laptop, when I'm running a meeting, it's a laptop-free meeting. Mm-hmm. Because if you have something that is more important than being in this meeting, don't come. Because we need to be present. And if we need to make this meeting 45 minutes or make this meeting a half an hour, but a really focused and engaged half hour, then let's make it that. But if you have more important things to do than sit here and spend time, don't come. Don't do me any favors. But, like, be present. Let's listen to each other. Let's ask questions. And then go back and do what you need to do. And I believe the same with my children and the same in my family. Like, I try really hard to be present where I am right now. Right now, I am here, and this is what I am focused on. I just got an email while the debate was on that my children have lice, so therefore I'm sure I do too. And I am like, you know what? It is true. And I'm like, oh, my God. So, you know what? And if there are any moms from Mount Tam here, I think my friend Eve said she might be here. I'm not sure if she is. Hi, Eve. Does Spencer have it? Because Jacob had 30 eggs. But only two live ones. And I know they're at the same table. So, and, you know, my other advice is to find, no, sir, you know, this is what it looks like. This is what life really happens, you know. Life happens when you're not making other plans, right? So it's real, and you just have to say, okay, I'm here now. This is what I'm doing. When I get home, I'm going to shave my head. And, you know, it's a contingency plan, you know. We'll deal with it. But it's like, I have to be here now, and I have to be present. And so whether it's a BlackBerry, but it was actually helpful because I got that information during the debate, and I fired off, you know, six emails, one to my assistant to say, I'm going to need to block a little time tomorrow. Something's come up. One to my husband who's in Chicago to say, you might want to Google Nicks or Nits. And one to my nanny to say, you know, that buzz cut Jacob's been wanting, we're going green light on that. So, and then I put it down and came back here and said, you know, this is where I am now. But I sort of put the tennis ball on the other side of the court. And that's how I use a BlackBerry, which is to say, like, what can I focus on, grab it, and then move it back. And so.
And then you need to stop at Long's on the way home to get the right stuff to get rid of that
exactly.
stuff. Just from a woman with a little experience on that part.
Yeah.
Exactly. I too, because I'm sitting next to her.
And the bed.
I moved.
She's doing the lean. So I have a classic story about lice. Our school was infested last year, and every 2 weeks we got the little paperwork at home, you know, that they were going to be inspected. Have you ever been to one of the inspections where the doctors stand there and they inspect each child before they're allowed back on campus? Charming. One of my girlfriends...
I don't get to go to the inspections.
Oh, see? So one of my girlfriends, because I work evenings, I've worked it out that way where I work until midnight, but so that I'm around for lice inspections. But one of my girlfriends said to me, her kids got lice and mine didn't, which was cool. And she's what's a nice way of saying, I mean, she's wonderful, but a little snooty. And so she said, oh, well, you know, I read up on it and, you know, lice only like clean hair. Working mom thing. I don't have time to clean their hair and they don't get lice. So my advice is just don't wash their hair, apparently. So we've avoided lice because we have dirty hair in our house. All right, Gretchen, let's go back to blackberries. You can stick with lice if you want to, but let's get back to blackberries and managing the blackberry, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, I want to just say I did work on the lice check last year at school. I took the morning off to go help, and yeah, good luck with that. Because there's some... I'm sorry. It's great that you know, though, at least.
How close do you have to be?
I don't know. But I envy, I need to say that I envy Tina because I'm completely the opposite with my BlackBerry. All my coworkers will attest to that. Yeah. But I actually, my BlackBerry has enabled me to take longer vacations with my son. It's enabled me to be at home with him when I'm able to work. And I completely understand, I wish I could be as disciplined as that. I wish all our meetings could be that disciplined. But I think the BlackBerry is an extension, allows me to be out of the office and with my child. And it does get in the way sometimes. I'm not going to deny it. You know, he wants to throw it in the ocean when we're at the beach. But we're at the beach, and we're together. So I think that the business that I'm in and the communication that flies around, and it's fast and it's timely, and it's, not that anyone's is different, but ours is especially immediate sometimes, and so it is important that I see it. If not, I'm going to get a phone call in a half an hour anyway. So I enjoy it, and I actually, the only part that's dangerous is when I drive and read my email.
Yeah.
Enjoying not to. But I think it's actually liberated my life a lot, and I wish it had happened sooner when he was smaller, but I love it. I know that it helps me have a better quality of life with my child.
And Gretchen, just so you know, it's going to be illegal coming January 1st. can't read email or text back. And I can't figure out why not, because it just seems perfectly reasonable to be doing this while you're driving. Which I totally do, and I think I'm going to kill myself. For what?
Right.
Like, this is not worth it. All right, Wilma, how about you?
I would just echo everything that everyone said. I mean, I think you need to make sure that you're incorporating discipline, and I try to have rules. So I look at the email at my trio. I have a trio. First thing in the morning while I'm heating up the milks and the coffee's going, and every now and then I find myself getting kind of focused on an email, and then all of a sudden I hear someone coming downstairs, like this morning, you know, "Mommy, I'm so mad at you. Why is it taking so long to heat up that milk?" It's like, oh, you know, the microwave was slow today. So you do have to just set some standards and some rules and incorporate some discipline. But it has been really liberating for me. A part of it is, I think, the culture in which we work. It's not expected it's on 24/7. It's not expected that you're looking at it on the weekends. But I think the assumption is you probably are. And I try to use it to give me that amount of flexibility. You know, I've been able to go on 3-week, month-long vacations during the summer, which is kind of my new thing and a suggestion I'd throw out there for people who have kids that are school-aged. If you can take out a big chunk of time during the summer, it's a great way to reconnect and use up your PTO. And you can do things like that when and if, you know, you're at a senior enough level, your company supports it, but if you also have that connection back in to work. So it's been great for me.
Yeah, I think it works too, but they do sometimes want to check it, or they get on there and start messing with your settings.
I've had that.
That's always fun too. Yeah. And then you can't find things. All right, we're going to move along. The next question is, many in our audience work traditional work environments, which we were talking about, the 8 to 6 or 8 to 8 in the office. 60% of mothers, according to the Pew Research, said they want part-time work. But the problem is, what I have found, and with my friends trying to get back to work, is that you want the part-time work, but you want fulfilling work. And so to be able to find, how do you find, are any of you part-time? Are you all? That's right, you've got the job share. So was it easier, have you found people coming back into the workforce? Let's talk about the people who are trying to get back into the workforce. They took a couple years off after they had kids, and now they're trying to get back into that workforce. Mm-hmm. How do you do it at a level where it's worth it, where you don't have to go take a low-level job when you've got the experience? Is there a way to do it?
So I think, I can't remember what the previous question was that triggered this, but I think the thought of equity, again, you know, depending, obviously it depends what you're returning to. If you've been with a company for some time before you've gone out on leave and are coming back to that company, I mean, actually in my case, when I came back with my daughter, And I came back initially part-time on my own, and then I did go into a job share situation, and it actually ended up as a promotion. As a job share team, we got a promotion together into a new role. And I think the thing that's been key for me and for my job share partner is that, you know, job sharing or part-time does not equal lack of ambition or you know, interest in progressing our career. And that's something that we've been, you know, quite vocal about, I think, within HP. But it really comes down to the individual and, you know, what you have to offer, you know, within the company. And I don't think there necessarily has to be any limit from a part-time perspective. And again, I recognize that not all companies may be as progressive. But I think for, you know, for us, it was about sort of first, you know, making a choice. You know, if your choice is to find more flexibility in the form of part-time, to put together a proposal and to find an advocate within your company. Mm. I mean, that was very key for us. And that can come in surprising ways. For us, it happened to be a male executive. And actually, at HP, Lou Platt, who was the CEO prior to Carly, he was a widower. He was widowed when his children were quite young. And so, you know, he was quite exceptional, I think, in that way, and that as a single dad, he had a real appreciation for what it meant, you know, to be a mother and juggling motherhood as well as career. And so, you know, I think we've been fortunate to be in a company that has been supportive. But I think, you know, it comes down to the individual. If you can find an advocate, if you can put together a proposal and be very specific about, you know, what you need and what you would deliver in that role. And it's definitely a process and it has to start somewhere. But I think that, you know, again, if you have equity and you can open people's eyes to the possibility and maybe even try it as a pilot or for a trial period of time, you know, that you might find people more open than you might expect.
Any other thoughts on that?
I have a couple thoughts more from a hiring perspective. I mean, there are a couple of things that would make me more open to it. I mean, obviously, if you've been at a place before and you work for someone and they know what you can do, they're the first person to go to. They're obviously right. Going to be your best advocate. But I would say approach a company and be willing to come on as a consultant, because I think especially in tough economic times, the sort of constraints on hiring additional heads is always tough. But if you can come with a proposal about, you know, being able to work on something and actually, you know, you're saving money by working part-time, you can get the job done in and of itself, I think that's very appealing. And then the idea potentially could be you could come on as an employee if you prove yourself or that kind of thing. I also think you want to talk first and foremost about your capabilities and why you're so excited about the job or the work, and make the part-time issue sort of secondary. You want to first sell yourself and make, you know, someone really convinced that you have something that you can bring to the table, that, you know, the right qualifications and the right energy level and the right commitment, and don't make it about the part-time. And then obviously it's not that you want to shy away from being clear about what your needs are, but I would not make that the predominant point of conversation. Mm-hmm. So,
how about concepts like that? Tina, you work at a company that is very family friendly. I know they have childcare on hand. Right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
On site.
Sites, yeah.
At different sites. I mean, is that something that's probably worth doing, is when you're looking at these companies, when you're looking to get back in, trying to find these companies that already have that system kind of in place to some degree? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's vital. You know, you want to come to an infrastructure rather than have to create one if given the option. And we're fortunate enough to be in the Bay Area. And I think it just takes some thoughtful planning about what those criteria are for you. Are there examples where people have had very flexible schedules, or is it a culture where you can work remotely? Gap, frankly, isn't a culture where working remotely is highly advocated. It's a creative environment. They want people there. People are kind of feel a sense of value based on which meetings they're in. That may be a tough environment, you know, if it wasn't already progressive, to be able to advocate for working from your bedroom, you know, in your pajamas and slippers. So I do think it's important to look at the underlying culture of an organization and then look up. I mean, look at who you'd be reporting into, your managers, the role models. And for those of us, you know, who are managers, try to role model that level of flexibility and really mean it. I mean, I do try to set a hard line. Like, I leave at 6. and I'll do work afterwards, but I leave at 6. And I found over the years that when you have those kinds of almost non-negotiable, with flexibility, of course, you know, but non-negotiable messages that you can consistently send to people, again, if you have that kind of flexibility and a culture that allows that, it's respected.
And Tina, does it work? Do you do some of that stuff at your company?
I think, you know, we don't have any, I really believe that you lean into the talent in the organization. And, you know, it's interesting, we were hiring in New York, because we have offices in New York and Chicago and here in San Francisco, and we were hiring a salesperson who had a good reputation. And this salesperson was all about the days she wanted to work from home. And it got to the point in the negotiation where I said to the hiring manager, what's this person going to do for us? Because I want to know what sales they want to make. I want to know what key accounts they're going to bring. I want to know how they're going to build our business, because that's why we're hiring them. If they turn out to be an A player and they turn out to be delivering results for the organization and they want to be able to have the flexibility to do that but deliver the results, they can go to the moon. Mm-hmm. But if this whole negotiation is about creating a work-from-home situation and not talking about those other things, that's just not, that's not the order in which we didn't make the hire. Because it was all about that and not about what this person was going to do for us. And it's a job. And it's work. And so when we hire people and we engage talent, we want that talent to be the best they can be for the job that they have. And every job has different roles and responsibilities. We have some jobs where running that meeting and facilitating that sprint or that agile technology integration is really, really important. We have other jobs where, you know, one of our most senior directors in the organization works out of her house in Rhode Island, and she's one of the most respected people in the organization, but not because she works from home, but because she is a fantastic director. And we talk about her and we respect her, not because she's a work-from-home mom, but because she owns her business, she's on her business, she delivers on time, her communication is excellent, and she makes it work. And so we respect her for that. The fact that she's doing it all out of her house in Rhode Island, she makes it work. We have other people who are victims. I have a no-victim mentality, and I have a no-victim policy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you have an issue, like, first we expect performance. And once we talk about the performance and what's expected of you in this job, then we can talk about how you get that done. But getting it done is what we're hiring for, and we have to be that way because we have to be a successful organization first.
So that's the same message Julie was saying as far as sell yourself. And then once you've sold yourself, then you can work out the schedule that might work for you once you've decided
we want
you.
Then you'll command the respect of your colleagues, you'll command the respect of the organization, and the flexibility will present itself. But first you have to show how you're going to lead, how you're going to win, how you're going to help that business grow.
Okay.
And then the flexibility will come.
That makes sense. Okay, so we're closing in on this. Any sort of final thoughts or funny stories of trying to balance where it didn't balance, where it fell off one side or the other, that you guys, I mean, I have one that I can share first that was one of those most bizarre days of my life. I had just come back from work after my first child, and I was sent out to San Quentin to interview a guy on death row. And I have boobs out here because they're just enormous, and I'm still, you know, I'm still pumping and breastfeeding and whatever, and I have to go to San Quentin to death row, and a guy is going to be executed in 3 days. I mean, it was serious business. I had never done anything like that before. So I get there and I go through the metal detector. No wire allowed at the metal detector, including perhaps something that holds up the things that were feeding my child at the time. So I had to take off my, how many men are in the room? I had to take off my bra to go into death row.
Wow.
Which was sort of the first interesting experience. So then you have to walk all the way down this long by all those without, you know, whatever. Okay, so you got the picture. And then we go in, I do the interview. It was totally, it was extremely intense and depressing and scary and everything all at once. There were amazing things that happened there where they were trying to intimidate us, which was, I was with another reporter from the Chronicle. So we have this really intense meeting. I leave and I shake this guy's hand and he's going to be dead in 3 days, which is pretty emotional and hard to know kind of where you're going with it. So I'm walking back past the rest of the prison with the hoots and hollers and no bra and you know, and this whole experience of this man who's going to die, and I'm taking it all in, and we get back to the truck, and I am spent. I am absolutely spent. And I've got a pump, because it's pumping time, and I am pumping in the truck thinking, where am I, and what have I become, and who is this person, you know? And it was just, that was literally one of my first days back, and I thought, I can't do this. This is not, I can't put all this together. And then the next day was a perfectly normal day where I had a normal interview, and life went on, and I realized that it was doable, and it was fun still for me and achievable, but that was one of those days where, wow, it all kind of came together at the same time, and was weird. So, so that was my experience with being a new mom and trying to work and thinking I was going to do it all and wasn't doing any of it particularly well that day. Any other thoughts? Share. I mean,
I'm not sure we can.
Death row. How can you top death row for crying out loud? No. But I'm just sort of final thoughts on folks who are going through this and trying to figure out a way to get back in, or to perhaps they're in a place where it's not balancing yet and they've got to find the way to ask the boss or the husband or something to change their priorities.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's liberating to know this is hard. I mean, it's really hard to balance all of this. And I remember when I had my first child and my mother was getting ready to leave after having been there for 2 weeks. You know, my dad had been there for a week and she was leaving and I was crying and I was 34 years old. You know, and I was sitting there crying and I went to undergrad and I went to law school and I'd done all this stuff and she was about to leave, and I just broke down. And, of course, she's saying, you can do it. Don't worry. You can do it, sweetie. I'm like, you're just saying that. You don't really need it. And, you know, just realizing this is really hard. And I remember thinking 16-year-old, you know, mothers on welfare can do this, and I'm struggling. So it's really hard to do. And I think if you just realize, you know, celebrate the moments, do the best you can do, be in the moment, you know, wherever that moment is. Keep perspective, because it will change. Like, it will change. Whatever it is, the lice will go away. It may take a while, from what I hear. But, you know, it will go away. And you just take solace in trying to do the best you can do every day with some sanity and harmony in your life.
Valerie?
All right.
Thank you.
So I think, well, I always tell my kids, I said, you can always ask, right? And so I think it's about asking for, you know, what you need and going back into the workforce regardless of what you're doing, but also knowing that, you know, you may make a choice for a period of time that doesn't mean you're committing to that path, you know, for the next 20 years, because things change and there may be periods in your children's lives, or maybe, you know, with your parent situation, as I had, you know, that require you to take a plateau for a while, you know, and then you can reengage or you can step up. So, you know, don't feel you're making a lifelong decision. You're making the best decision that you can in the moment. And the other thing that I found is my kids have gotten older, and I say my son just started middle school, and, you know, the neat thing as they've gotten older is, you know, I've been able to include them more in my work experience, and, you know, to the extent that they actually think it's kind of neat in some of the things that I do. And a couple of years ago, I mean, I had an opportunity to go to Washington and to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and I took my 10-year-old son, who was studying American history at the time. Wow. And, you know, it was just an incredible experience. And I thought, wow, you know, I would not have had this experience had I not been working. You know, and he enjoyed it. And I think it kind of opened his eyes to, wow, you know, it's kind of cool what mom does and so forth. And so, you know, it's been a really, it's actually, I think, made the experience richer. And I think I always lived in fear of, you know, one day my children were going to ask me, you know, mom, why do you work? And, you know, my friend's, you know, John's mom doesn't work. And I always thought about, you know, how would I respond to that? And, you know, you read lots about it. And it's really interesting because my son has never asked me. And my daughter asked me once, and I said, well, you know, first of all, I said, I love being a mom. I said, but I do enjoy what I do and my work. And I also said, Dad and I like to share the financial responsibility for the family, and just, you know, left it at that. And I think they've always respected that, that choice. And, you know, say even on the craziest of days, mm-hmm. you know, I think if I'm honest with them, even about the stress that I have, you know, they appreciate that, and they've supported supported me in their own way. And now, as I say, as they've gotten older, it's a wonderful experience to be able to share that both ways.
Thank you, Valerie. Gretchen?
There's a few things that I have going on. Number one, I think you have to be really proud of yourself. I think you have to remember, as you said all the time, what you've accomplished today. Look forward to what you're going to accomplish tomorrow, even if something's going to get in the way and you're going to walk into work with something on your shoulder that you didn't plan, or, you know, that you're going to forget something at home, or you're going to forget to send the apple in the lunchbox. I mean, I think you have to be proud of everything that you do accomplish and really strive to do that every day so that you can get victories, because little victories add up and you can go home and be proud of yourself. I think you have to have a strong network of friends, and as women, I think we usually do, and I think you have to have a friend you can call for this reason, whether professional, this reason to complain about your husband, this reason to ask about, you know, you have to have a strong network, and I think that you really, you know, sometimes I get home and I'm like, wow, who am I going to call about this? Who's going to understand? And it's important to be able to find someone and to have someone that fills that gap, because you can't do it alone. You cannot believe that you can go to bed and with this huge weight on your shoulders, because it's a lot to bear sometimes. And then two things about my son. Last night we talked about a tour. We have a pretty nice office at the Presidio, and we give tours a lot, and I invited some of his friends to come, and he said, you know, and this kind of gets back to you and them observing the career and observing your accomplishments, and he said, you know, Mom, and he's been there a bunch, he said, do you think that I could conduct part of the tour, you know, since I know the place so well? And I was like, oh, perfect, you know, yeah. I'm really proud of him. And lastly, I said, you know, I have to go to this thing tomorrow night, and I need a funny story. And he said, well, do you think you want to tell him about the time when I was 3 and you locked me in the car? And I was like, oh, yeah, that'd probably be funny, I guess. But the truth is, he got with me on the outside instructing him, he got out of his car seat, flipped through the thing, went into the middle, and tapped the button and got out of the car, you know, which I have to believe I had something to do with, but besides just locking him in. Anyway. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gretchen.
I have two thoughts. One, I moved to Seattle for sort of my husband's job, and then we lived in Seattle for many years. I worked for Nordstrom, and then we were both leaving our jobs, and I got recruited by Urban Outfitters, which is based in Philadelphia. And after months of sort of deciding what to do, I finally convinced my husband to move cross country. So we moved cross country for me to take this job, and I was 7 months pregnant and had a 2-year-old, and we got to Philadelphia and we didn't have a place to live. We were living in temporary housing, and we didn't have a doctor for me. We didn't have a job for my husband. We didn't have a place to live. We didn't have a nanny. I mean, it was sort of like throwing it all up, and it was probably the toughest experience we've had. But I felt like most people don't have all of those things to handle at once. But I do feel like when you're pregnant or when you have little kids, a lot of times you feel like it's really not a good time to make a change for your career or to focus on your career or to do something that might be a little bit risky. And I don't believe that. I mean, I probably wouldn't advise someone to necessarily take on all of that that I took on. But I do think that you don't necessarily need to sacrifice sort of asking for, you know, a promotion or applying for a cool job that sounds cooler than the one you have just because you have kids or you're pregnant. I think that you can prove yourself and still manage your life. But one funny story was when we did move to Philadelphia, my husband was looking for a job and he was unemployed. And one day I came home and my daughter and I were talking and she said, where's Dad? And I said, oh, he went, I think I said, he went for a meeting. He went to work. And she said, what do you mean? Daddies don't work. Mommies work. Daddies go to the gym. And I just loved, I don't know, I love that. My husband, of course, didn't, but I just felt like the fact that, that was her perception as a 2.5-year-old girl, yeah. that's the world order and that's how it is, you know, just sort of gave me a little bit of pride.
Switching the stereotypes there in a big way. All right, yeah. And Tina?
I'll sort of end where I started, which is I really would encourage every single person in this audience and myself and all of us to, like, not sweat the small stuff, because the small stuff, it just goes away over time, and just appreciate the moment and appreciate kind of the fact that we even can be here tonight and that we have a choice and we have a voice, and that voice matters and that people will really listen to us. And so what I've done is, in building on your idea about friendship, I know a lot of non-working moms, or the moms who work out of their homes, or, you know, are involved in their communities or involved in school. Those are my best friends, because those are the people that really can partner with me and help me and appreciate and respect what I'm trying to do during the day, and I appreciate and respect what they're trying to do during the day. And they're my field agents. Like, they're the people who can actually tell me, like, Tina, this is where the lice place is. Tina, you better sign up for the field trip. Tina, you have to hand in your community hours for school, which I didn't do for 2 years, which is how I think I got the class mom assignment, because they think I didn't do anything. I just didn't know you're supposed to hand in the hours. So I am the class mom in first grade, because they asked me to be, and rather than saying, oh my goodness, I can't be the class mom, I'm running this company, I'm running my family, we're moving, we're doing all this crazy stuff, I was like, okay, I'm going to do the class mom the way I can do it. I'm not going to do it the way maybe somebody else could do it, and I'm going to enlist the other moms in the class who have time to help, but, like, I can set up a listserv. I can put an Excel spreadsheet together with the addresses. I can do the things that I can do at night on my computer. I can send out the evites. Those are things I can do, and I'm not going to feel like I have to be somebody else. I just have to be me, and I have to contribute in a way that's joyful, and I have to find people who share in that joy with me and can appreciate what I can contribute, because I think that we often push people away thinking that we have to do it all or we're trying to prove something, and I think the most important thing is for us to be the best us we can be, and that's what I tell my children, and that's what I try and sort of model at work, which is lean into your strengths, do the things you do exceptionally well, and identify what your weaknesses are. And then figure out if you want to fix them or if you want to work around them. But don't try and cover them up. I think we often focus on our weaknesses more than our strengths. You know, if your child comes home with a report card and it's A, C, and B, you're probably going to talk to them about the C. Talk to them about the A's. Find out if they're great at math, how can they be better at math? How can you make them feel spectacular about that? And not focus on the weaknesses. If there are things they need to shore up, absolutely. And if there are expectations they're not meeting, same at work, same with yourself. But I think we often beat ourselves up for the C's as opposed to celebrating the A's. And I think that that's something that we can all just be so much better at and not resent the moms that are wearing tennis skirts, because I can imagine that I do resent them too sometimes because I want to play tennis at 10 in the morning. But say, that's a choice. And I didn't make that choice, and that's okay. And I love the fact that you're playing tennis at 10 in the morning because it's something that you're pursuing for yourself. And I love the fact that I get to go and run a company and feel great about it and lead great people and do great things around the world for moms. And that's what we do, and I have to celebrate that. And know that, like, life is a series of chapters, and the next one is yet to be written. And I'm so excited to figure out what it's going to be. But this chapter is pretty damn great, and I'm really glad that I'm in it.
I'm not really sure how much more I can say. That was wonderful. That was a wonderful ending. The one thing I will say that I gathered from all of you guys in my experience is asking for help and offering help. I love to get asked for help from my friends when they're like, oh, I'm juggling and I can't get them today from school and it happens to be my day off. I love being able to be there and be there for them. And vice versa, they love being there for me. And so not being afraid to ask for help and offering it on the same sense when you can or on your terms or inviting the kids to Lucasfilms, you know, onto the campus, that's exciting. I have kids down to my studios all the time on the weekends when I can. Help them. So I think that's a huge thing, and not being afraid to ask for help, because I know how good it feels when somebody asks me and I can do it, and if I can't, it's okay too. Anyway, this is great. Thank you to Flexperience and Mommy Tract. You guys are fantastic. This is why it's so great. Oh, I forgot. We have Q&A. If you want to stay, we've got a little bit of time for Q&A. There are microphones. We've got some clearing out because we went long with the debate, too, which is totally fine. Not offended. But questions are good. Thank you.
I have a question. So we've talked about work-life balance and focusing on your family and on your kids and your husband and your friends. But what about you? Do you ever find time for you? And how do you create that time for yourself?
So we're go, Wilma. Yeah.
All right. I just try to understand when, again, enough is enough. And I know that I'm a better person and I like myself better if I exercise. So I block out from 1 to 3 on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays because that's my dance jazzercise class. I do not go every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I had not gone for 2.5 months, but I went on Wednesday. And I'm not going to go for another week because I know I have meetings, but that's my release. I try to do a lot of exercise over the weekend, and it may just be getting on the bike with one of my boys to bike to the store rather than drive to the store. So I try to identify when I'm maxing out, and I just need some time to myself, whether it's running or getting my toes done. It's like I've been trying to get my toes done for a month. Richard, I just need half an hour on Sunday afternoon to go get my toes done, and I'll try to do it when the boys are otherwise occupied. So it's just identifying those moments when you know you just need some time.
Right. Any other advice, guys? Well, I think I'm probably a bad example, but the funny thing on exercise is that, so my doctor tells me every year, annual appointment, the one thing I need to do is exercise. So last year I told her that, well, in fact, my nanny was taking my dog for a walk every day, and she had to remind me that didn't exactly constitute exercise on my part. But that was one thing I couldn't outsource. But I do think, and you know, I think one of the key things is sort of getting over the guilt of feeling of taking time for ourselves, yeah. Because I know that's something that I struggle with. Like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't go get a facial, like how decadent and so forth. But you know, I've convinced myself, and I still don't exercise, but I do get my nails done, and I do go get a facial every once in a while. And I think, as Diane was saying, it is easier once your kids get into school because it gives you a little bit more flexibility around that. But I do think it's really important because I tell my kids, I mean, the same reason why I get my Peet's coffee in the morning, I say, because you want a happy mommy. And so by taking, you know, by taking that time, I do think it makes me much more able to handle the stress. And so I think it's really important.
I'm waiting for my kids to get a little older to figure it out.
Other questions, guys? We're going to hand down the microphone for you.
I think one thing I heard consistently is that we all need help. We can't do it on our own. How do you and what do you outsource as executives and as moms? How do you have help? Who's helping you? I have a little bit of help, but I'm curious what kind of support staff and network you have to help you do it all, because it's kind of crazy.
I have a nanny, a babysitter, who picks my son up from school and stays with him until I get home. And, you know, I think that's pretty much all we need. It's from 2:30 to 7:30, basically, and tonight also. I think it's as simple as that. I mean, it's certainly something that I can afford. Not everyone can afford, and I think probably all of us have that ability. So when maybe previously or earlier in my career, you know, it was friends, of course, you know, and neighbors, and generosity of people who understood what we were going through.
Neighbors are a great resource too. And one of the things I've done is when I was, because of my crazy hours, I actually only need someone Wednesdays and Thursdays in the afternoon after school until my husband gets home from work. When I was interviewing people, lots of babysitters said, I don't do laundry. And I'm like, you're out. Let's go to the next one. Out. And so I need it. Laundry's my pet peeve. And I was obsessed with finding somebody who would do my laundry. And it's better than anything else. And she does it after they get to sleep because my husband gets home late. So it's not like it's taking away from the kids. But she has to be there and she's doing nothing. And she gets our laundry done every week. And I love that. It's the part that brings me sanity.
Right.
Any other thoughts?
I have my nanny when my little one is in preschool do all of my errands. So she does all of my grocery shopping and she does all my returns because I buy everything online. So I always have returns. My husband's like, that's a category. He's like, yeah, returns is a category. She has to go to the post office probably once every other week. We have like a dry cleaning delivery service. I have a cleaning lady who comes twice a week. My nanny does my laundry. For a while, we had someone who prepared food and dropped it off once a week, and it was a bunch of meals, and we refrigerated it, but then we got sick of his food, so now we're eating cereal again, and, you know.
I'm fortunate to have a nanny as well. My number one priority on a Sunday night is actually my nanny list. And I sort of keep track of, you know, all the sort of assorted errands and so forth. But there also are, a lot of services out there. I mean, errand services and so forth that you can take advantage of. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's cost involved, but, neighbors and so forth. And so, but I think a lot of it is sometimes it's hard to even find the time to figure out what you need help at. I mean, it's what I find. And, you know, if I can carve out just even a half an hour, like on a Sunday night, and I just make my, you know, kind of mad list of everything that needs doing. And the other thing, frankly, that I have not done well is actually ask my husband for help. And he offers it. But, you know, he will not think of it on his own because often I think, wow, you know, when he's driving to work in the morning, he's just thinking about work. And, I've got my list of 20 things. But I have found actually when I give him a list and I delegate a few things to him, he will get them done. But it, you know, it takes a little bit more planning on my part. But
yeah, you end up doing it all yourself because it's, you forget to.
It takes longer sometimes to delegate.
Another little hint on that part, if you're looking for people to help you to hire, I've hired some of the part-time workers at our school because they're reliable. It's not hiring a teenager to come babysit for you who doesn't show up because the boyfriend came over that day or whatever. They're reliable, they need the work, and they already know your kids from being at school, and they've got sort of the same hours as your kids do at school, so they've got the free time in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. If you only want to hire them for 3 hours, they're willing to do it because it's just an add-on to their 8-to-5 workday rather than asking somebody to just cut out a 3-hour window and you have to pay them more for that. That's been a great resource for me, and they're kind of already vetted, through the school system. So,
I handle it all until this time of year when I have to plan my son's birthday party, and I'm falling apart. And I'm just wondering what you do about birthdays, because I think it's a big issue.
My personal opinion is we need to downgrade birthday parties.
Yeah.
It's gotten crazy. I don't want the elephant in the backyard. I don't want him there. I don't want to clean up the poop. I don't want the elephant back there, or the dung, or whatever you call it. So, but what do you guys do for birthdays?
Yeah, for me, I love Evite. I think it's a great product. And I think that sending out, you know, handwritten invitations and trying to manage that is really challenging. So that's the first thing, is it's electronic. The second thing is I make that something. I love birthday parties. I love parties in general. So I make that something that I can do with my boys. And so sometimes we plan them like months in advance because it's something that we are interested in together. And so we'll go online, we'll look at different things. But recently I found this woman, again, outsourcing, who does SophieStressFreeParties.com. And she's awesome, and she's been a help. But also I just find that it's something that rather than making it, again, work, I try and make it something that's joyful that I can actually do with my kids and we really enjoy. And having two boys, we don't have a lot of similar interests. Because the things they're interested in, like professional sports and other kinds of sports and Pokemon and battling and, you know, Star Wars, present company excluded, it's just like I have a hard time engaging in that stuff. I want to. I try. But parties, like, bring it on. So I try and celebrate it, but I do think electronics are a great way to do that.
I was going to say, for my daughter, I just did a pottery, paint your own pottery place, and I mean, it was literally like one phone call. And then we showed up, and they had such a good time. You know, so there's tons of places like that that, I mean, you want to try and be so original, but the reality is that doesn't matter so much to your kids, so I think you don't have to. For my son, we're having like four kids over to our house and having cake, and it's an hour and a half, you know. So I think that, and we did, by the way, we used this Hallmark e-card, and he helped me make it. So we put a picture, and it's, like, animated. I realized it's actually probably more fun for the other three-year-olds to receive because they can see it online, and there's, like, a picture of Sam showing up as opposed to just getting a piece of paper that they can't read. It has music and stuff. So, you know, it made me feel less guilty about going electronic for the invitation.
I actually have a question for Diane. For those of you who were here last year, we had Sarah from the Alice Morning Show on our panel, and she was fabulous. One of the things that was interesting about her story is, given her job, which is very early in the morning, she's able to participate in her kids' lives in the afternoon. My question is your schedule by design, or did you luck into this schedule that happened to work out when you had kids?
I worked into the schedule. It was by design, absolutely. So I actually started, when I had children, I was doing the morning show. And I went to my boss and said, I'm pregnant, which actually is a funny story. He's notorious. But he said to me, he goes, oh, I love pregnant ladies on television, right? It's like great for ratings. He goes, it's a shame you have to have the kids. And he was totally serious.
That's like, right
they
out
should
of
just
Knocked
be pregnant.
Up, the movie.
What?
It's right out of Knocked Up, the movie.
It literally was. I mean, yeah. He was sincere. He was not trying to be funny. He was sincere that it was great for ratings, but man, you know, you have to deal with the consequences. So, so I went to him and said, look, this is the only way I can make this work. And luckily, one of the things that people have told me in the past, which is, you know, if you've already had children, it's a harder decision to make. But if you can get high enough up before you have the kids, then you have more control over what you're doing when you come back. And now I work weekends. I work 3 to 11:30 on Saturdays and Sundays, and I work 3 to 11:30 on Wednesdays and Thursdays. So I have a 4-day work week. People think it's crazy because they see me at 11:30 at night, and then I'm at school at 7:30 in the morning with the kids. But for me and for our family, it works really well, and I did it on purpose. And that allows me to be in the classroom during the week and look like I'm an at-home mom. I sort of joke that I have the best and worst of both worlds. But yes, it was by design, and it's not traditional at all, but it works really well for me and for being a mom and sort of for being a wife. It works better being a mom than a wife, but you know, we got to go both ways. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hi, Wilma, you're the only one who has three children. I have two, and I don't know if it's a coincidence that the rest of you have one or two, or if it's a choice that you think at a third child, the balance between work and life becomes really too hectic that you can't manage it as well. So is that a conscious choice linked to work or not? Basically.
So what were you thinking?
I'm just gonna, yeah, it's like, I'm feeling on the hot spot here. I wasn't thinking clearly. And in defense of three children, who the third is about as precious as he could be.
I want three.
Well, and you get better, they get better. Somehow, they're a blessing and even more precious. But I will also say when you have two children, the thought of having a third is intimidating and just freaky. And you manage it. Again, one child will suck 100% out of you if he could. And you just manage, and you know, you do a lot of block and tackling, and you over there, you get in your room, don't talk to each other, don't touch each other. So it works.
Mm-hmm. I think if I had started younger, I might have gone for three. I had my second daughter, my second child at 42, so for me it really wasn't in the car. So I don't, you know, I think for me, I mean, two was great, and I felt blessed to have two. My job share partner has three. She has twin boys and a daughter. So, you know, two is a handful, but three would have been fun, too.
I think one, like you said, Wilma, is it will suck 100% of your time, you know, just like two would take 50% each. You know, I think that mine wasn't a career choice, but I think it would be great to have more. Because once you get beyond a certain working age, then you have your whole family around you. And so that's sort of something to look forward to in the future. And sort of it's like you get through diapers, you get through these years, and then, wow, you have the great big family to look forward to.
Any other?
Yeah, I wish I had four. No, seriously, I'm not a big believer in three personally because we were three and it was always like this, like there was always two and one. So I always said it was two or four, but not three for me. But I just got started too late. And so, you know, I'm 44 and Jacob is 9 and I didn't get on it fast enough.
I think we have time for one more question.
Okay. All of the panelists today have been so inspirational for me as a mother of two. And what I want to know, though, is who inspires you?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'll pass that off to these folks. Who inspires you?
I would say for me, my mom worked when I was growing up. She was a social worker. She worked part-time when I was young and then full-time as I got older. But I think just growing up in a household she was also like the president of the school board and on the symphony and like the president of the Wellesley Club. And like, I read this article of her in the newspaper and I was like, wow, I thought I was psychotic. She was really psychotic. I didn't realize it. But I think you know, I ultimately always felt like all this effort was being put into my and my sister's lives, our education, so that we could grow up and do something. And I sort of feel, I just personally, it's a personal feeling, I have this feeling like if I were to stop and just dedicate my whole life, you know, to nothing but raising my kids to grow up and do something, you know, it just didn't, I don't know, just the vision and the model I always had was you do something with all that you have and you also love your kids and take care of them, and that's okay. And
well, I think for me, actually, it was my dad. I mean, my dad was always my greatest sort of encourager and supporter of my career, and always really proud of my accomplishments. And so, you know, I think definitely he inspired my career. And I think, you know, now my parents are gone, but I mean, now my children really inspire me, because and I look at my daughter and my son, and I think of what I would like them to accomplish, and I feel as though, you know, I'm showing them that, you know, motherhood is my greatest joy, but also, you know, having a career and something that you enjoy doing is very important as well. So
I am one of seven. I was the youngest of seven. And so I there's this picture of all of us lined up in San Francisco on the way to school, and I'm not standing yet, I don't think, but the rest of them, and they're all in Catholic uniforms with starched cotton tops and pants. And I look at that picture every time I look at it, I think, my mother had to iron all of those clothes. Like, I haven't ironed anything and I can't remember how long. And, you know, it was way back when, and they certainly weren't sending stuff out to the dry cleaner. So that was impressive to me. She didn't work. She stayed at home. She took care of us. But with seven of us, I figured that was sort of more than enough of a job for her to handle. And that definitely, and they were so proud of what I accomplished along the way. I think I would have almost felt bad bowing out a little bit too, because they were so proud of what I was doing, and that inspired me too.
Well, I can't thank all of you enough. We all know that you have people at home waiting for you. So thank you for taking time out of your busy lives, and thank you to the panel. You guys are spectacular.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. It was fun.